Bite of a Cow's Eye, Chapter 16. The acknowledgement from the audience was awesome as Ray hurried briskly down the aisle, dodging the hands of frenetic fans eager to touch their legend. This was the big time, and Ray had made it. He accepted the award for the best science fiction fantasy novel of the year from Orville Grand, a celebrity in days gone by, but the night was for Ray Bender, and the shimmering gold plate that he thrust defiantly above his head at the cameraman told the world that he had made it. The crowd roared, his parents roared, Donna roared, Sean Saunders roared. "Thank you one and all," Ray shouted above the applause, and the cheering began again. When it died, Ray began a thank you spiel which included his parents, his literary agent, and his ex-girlfriend Donna, who was now his fiancée and had been for 12 months. As well, Ray thanked the people who sparked off this major novel, The Slaughter of Sad Cattle. Mr. Stefano and his workmates at the abattoirs. He especially thanked Eugene Paris, who, Ray said, made the first few months of his life at the abattoirs so much like a living hell that it was bound to be manifested in his writing. Of course, Ray did not expect Paris to be at the presentation, but it surprised and pleased him to see Bluey and Tangles present in the audience, although they both looked typically out of place. Ray had not seen Paris for some time, in fact, ever since the day Ray became the new foreman, over a year ago. The book in question continued to create incredible controversy among the literary artists and critics of the genre, angering the censorship board with its tale of extreme graphic gore, the content of which gave him his legion of fans and the infamy the book deserved. If not for the notion of free speech, the book would never have seen the light of day. There had never been a book quite like it, and perhaps there never would again. During his speech, Ray openly admitted that his next book was going to be a collection of children's bedtime stories in defiance of the critics and misguided public who thought he was nothing more than a cruel, barbaric, even satanic man. The audience laughed, but it was true. Ray had already begun work on The Cat That Lost Its Appetite. Had anyone really known Ray, they would have been able to understand this logical progression. It was a promise made by him to Donna. He swore to her that there was to be no more violent stories and no more eating raw mincemeat. He was going to settle down and write children's stories full-time. A $20,000 grant from the Arts Board assured him that he would not starve for at least a year. He had contemplated resigning from his position at the abattoirs. But the camaraderie that he had developed there was something akin to family and something Ray could not easily walk away from. Ray had already discussed his future plans with Tangles, who was currently filling Ray's shoes whilst he took a well-earned vacation. And finally, I want to thank you, my readers, who have stuck with me through all of this. I don't know that many of you, but without you, I'd still be trying to coax my first published story out of those cruel-hearted so-and-so editors. More laughter. More applause. This was a night to be remembered. Ray had never felt so good, and as he left the stand to take his place beside Donna, who had never looked so radiant, and his parents, who had never looked so proudly up at him, his life had changed completely. Now he found acceptance wherever he went. People seemed to smile at him just a little more often. Ray was basking like a seal on a beach that no killer whale could reach. But nothing good ever stayed that way for long, and fate, that pivot upon which everything in life hung, took a strange turn. While returning from that successful evening with Donna in his new Ford, Ray made a right-hand turn into the street, which led to the place where it all began. "Ray," Donna said with mild surprise, "what are you doing?" "I have to pay homage," Ray replied, smiling. "I need to thank the cows for making me into the man I am today." Donna smiled. "It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You'll frighten the security guard." Ray laughed. "I told Bruce to expect the unexpected. Anyway, I think he knew I might call around this evening. It's very symbolic, don't you think?" Donna made no comment, so Ray continued. "In any case, I don't think I'll get in trouble." "Well, you virtually own the place anyway." The car pulled up outside the front office, which overlooked the fields and car park. The building looked dark and sinister with its narrow slitted glass windows in an otherwise barren brick wall that towered 2 stories above them, casting an imaginary shadow over them as they stood at the front entrance. And through one of the windows, Bruce Dixon, the security guard, was sitting, sipping a coffee from a plastic thermos lid and watching them with interest. "You really don't mind?" Ray asked. "I think it's important that I come here tonight, just to pay a visit." Donna's frown was short-lived. She smiled and said, "Of course not. Just don't be long. I'll stay with Bruce." Bruce greeted them at the door. Congratulations, Ray. How did it all go? To be honest, Ray said, it couldn't have gone better. The crowds were never my scene. I thought you'd come here tonight. You just can't help yourself, can you? Bruce grabbed a set of keys from the wall. Day off and all. No way I'd be coming back here on my holidays. Still, if that's what you want. Ray said, the call of nature was strong. I'll open the slaughter room for you then. Ray thanked him. You know, Bruce said as they made their way to the room, if it were me, I'd be basking in the spotlight for as long as possible, not coming down here to this smelly hellhole. It's funny, Ray said, but for so many years all I wanted to do was be accepted and to be a critical and artistic success. Yet now it doesn't seem to matter. I suppose it's like sex. The expectation and the anticipation is the best part, Bruce chuckled. You need a new partner, Donna said and laughed. Bruce snickered. I'll tell my wife you said that. Never you mind now. Our sex life's pretty good, if you can believe somebody can love an overweight lump like me. Actually, Ray said, you look like you've lost a bit. I wish, Bruce said. Unfortunately, this is the kind of job that puts on the calories. You sit in your ass all night, and the only thing you can do is stay awake is to eat chocolate bars. Bruce patted his extensive and expansive stomach. Yep, there's a few in there, all right. Well, you'd better shape up, old man. How are you going to chase them burglars? Catch, not chase, Bruce said. He tapped his side where a small .38 special revolver rested in his holster. I don't need to chase any bugger with a baby like this on my side. Donna made an unimpressed, oh, sound. Ray was likewise not impressed. From what I know about .38 specials, you ought to learn how to run. Well, Bruce said with some misgiving, the boss has the .357 Magnum. He paused between sentences as though thinking about it. Finally, with confidence returning, he said, anyway, I don't think there'll be too many opportunities for me to try it out up here, hey? The place has no natural enemies, Ray agreed. They arrived at the door which opened into the slaughter room. Bruce noticed the padlock had not been properly snapped shut, and he cursed himself for making the error of not locking it properly. Take your time, Bruce said. He switched the light on. Somehow the brightness made the place look even more eerie with the stained concrete floor and the motionless killing implements resting against the walls. There was hardly a whiff of blood discernible, but then, Ray thought, it was probably because he was used to the smell. I might just swallow up some of the atmosphere a while. Meaning you want to be left alone a while, Ray smiled. It's up to you. Donna took Bruce by the arm. Come on, old fella, she said. We know when we're not wanted. I'll just stay a few minutes. I might get inspired to write a sequel. The frown that creased Donna's petite face told Ray that the comment was in poor taste. The room was a gaping cavernous mouth, enormous in size, with teeth made of glistening metal. A breath of wind, ripe and reeking, blew warm, moist air through the door, seeking Ray, seeking the depths of his overactive mind that night. This tortured place, concealing the horror with its grey washed walls like lidded eyes. Though the paint covered the blood, it could not diminish the stench. Above hung chains that now and then caught the glow of moonlight from slit-eyed windows that hung heavy with a film of dirt and the undigested horror of spiders. Ray admired the chains as though they maintained a kind of grotesque symmetry about them, purposeful and cold. But unlike death, they lived, gently chattering to the ghosts inside the room. It was a room that administered death 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, and the chains told stories that the painted walls had hidden. And Ray listened that night because he thought he heard the chains talking to him, and what they were saying planted fear in his mind. He heard a noise, a footstep behind him, perhaps. Somebody was there. But when he looked, he saw nothing but the metal chains swaying in a putrid phantom breeze. If only I had a torch, Ray thought, or better still, a gun. And he wondered where that gun Stefano had given him had ended up. Then he remembered. He'd placed the gun in his locker the day Stefano had given it to him. There was no way Ray would ever consider using it on anybody. Still, it would have been nice to have had it handy now, especially now, since things about the room were giving him the creeps. Ray toyed with a few of the items on the shelf, mostly knives and pans and sharpening tools. He looked over to the cupboard that housed Eugene Paris's antique tools. It was one of those things he never got around to throwing out. He made a mental note to throw them first thing in the morning. For some reason the padlock was missing, and then it dawned on Ray that something was wrong. He did not realise that he had been followed there that night, but as he turned away from the cupboard, he realised his mistake. And yet at the same time, something told him this was how it had to end. "Looking for something, Bender?" "Dear God," Ray gasped, holding his heart as though it would burst out with the shock of being surprised by the most dangerous natural enemy that he had. Paris said, "I've been waiting for you. We have unfinished business to attend to. I never got a chance to settle my final account with you." "How long have you been here?" Paris snorted. "I followed you here, you dumb fuck. I see you haven't lost your foul language or your dislike of me, apparently. Well, Ray, you just bring out the fucking best in me." With the surprise slowly ebbing, Ray managed to gain composure. "You're trespassing, by the way." Paris remained silent. "I'll call the guard," Ray threatened, but made no move to the door. Paris laughed at the balk. They both knew Bruce couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag, and maybe Bruce and Donna were safer where they were. This encounter really had nothing to do with either of them. Paris was here for a final showdown. To emphasise this, he told Ray to open the cupboard and pick out a weapon. "I'm not fighting you again," Ray said. The shock of being set up by Paris, coupled with the fear inside of him, was still too hard to comprehend. "I've killed enough people. I'll not kill you despite the way you've treated me in the past." The colour of Paris's face paled, taken by surprise. He barked out a nervous, "Bullshit, Bender. I killed Wood Duck, and I caused Mick and Renee's death also." Paris spat, "Fuck you. They were accidents. Tangle told me Wood Duck had an accident, and he said he fucking saw it. Why would he lie about that?" Ray had no answers. Maybe Tangles couldn't stand his brother either. "Pick a weapon from the cupboard, Bender." Ray made for the door, but Paris kicked it shut and stood beside it. "Let me through," Ray demanded. Paris folded his sinewy arms. "To get through this door, you have to get through me. Choose a weapon. Either way, I'm going to turn you into roadkill." Ray ignored Paris and went for the door. "I won't fight. Get up, you bastard." Ray found himself on the floor, blood spilling from his nose. His head felt as though it had been covered with a steel bin and bashed with sledgehammers. Paris stood his ground, white-knuckled. Ray stood up, but was no sooner belted to the floor again. If his nose wasn't broken the first time, it definitely was now. "You're weak as piss, Bender. I thought you'd have bulked up a bit working here, but you always were a bit of a fucking Nancy boy. Get up." Ray considered his options. Maybe the old rusty weapon in the cupboard weren't bad options, after all. He got to his knees and crawled to the cupboard. Paris came again and swung his boot at Ray's midriff, but the blow missed as Ray reached the cupboard. Paris stepped back as Ray's face took on a sinister, devilish glare. "You're fucked now, Paris." Ray flung open the cupboard and reached inside, pulling out the first weapon that he could find. It was a long blade, but as Ray picked it up, the handle fell apart in his hand and the blade fell to the floor. "No," Paris said as he pulled a switch knife from his pocket. "You're fucked, Bender." The slashing blade made a deep incision across Ray's back as he turned to avoid the blow. "Oh," Paris wailed playfully, "a neat cut." His return blow made an equally deeper one in the opposite direction. Blood began seeping through the wound. Paris admired the damage. A cross of blood seeped through the fabric of Ray's shirt. He shuddered and fell, too paralysed with fear to move. Beside him was the rusty blade. He scooped it up. "You know, fart face, that cut on your back makes you look like Jesus on the cross." "Piss off, Paris," Ray mumbled. "Well," Paris said tartly, "I don't know if Jesus would have said that to his executioners." He wiped the blade clean. "I know my Bible, Bender." In the brief pause that followed, Ray managed to suck some precious oxygen back into his lungs. He stood and then lunged forward with the knife. "Then say your prayers, Paris." But the knife didn't find its mark. Instead, Paris sidestepped and landed an elbow into Ray's face, knocking him out cold for an instant. Seconds later, Ray awoke to find Paris leaning over him with an old antique pole axe barreling down upon him. Ray avoided the main force of the blow, but his earlobe and one side of his cheek were not so lucky. The sharp pain prompted Ray into action. A fist caught Paris in the midriff section, winding him sufficiently enough for him to let go of the pole axe. Ray followed up with a series of blows to the head for which Paris had no answer. After a year of heavy labour, Ray's strength had developed to a degree that had become more than a match for Paris. The final blow Ray delivered knocked Paris out cold. Suddenly, aside from the wheezing gasps Ray emitted from tired lungs, the room was silent. Donna and Bruce had gone to the office for coffee and would never have heard the commotion. It was just Ray and the singlet-draped demon at his feet. But despite the stark silence of the room, Ray's explosive fury had not abated, and the warm, steady trickle of his own blood running down his neck, saturating his shirt, was enough for him that night. It was all that he needed to go over the edge. So Ray went over the edge. There was no sound. No sound. Save one. Above him, the gentle squeak of the harnessing straps, rocking on metal pulleys, made Ray take notice of where the two of them had ended up during the melee, on the killing room floor. Paris was unconscious in the stainless steel trough, while above them the apparatus for securing animals for the slaughter hung, swaying, suggesting by their delicate movements that Ray should do what he felt like doing all along. Now here was his golden opportunity. There was no hesitation in his mind as he lowered the harness over Paris's limp body. Ray clasped the buckles over Paris's hands and feet. They fitted with ease. He rolled Paris over onto his stomach and fastened the central support strap that activated the automatic pulley. The sudden jerk of the pulley as it collected the slack from the rope was enough to rouse Paris from his unconscious state. "What? What? Bender?" Ray noticed for the first time the gruff, assertive tone was not there. Instead, Paris's voice was almost childlike. "Hi, Eugene," Ray said in a friendly, happy manner. Paris swiveled to face Bender. "Bender, get me down." Ray didn't reply. "Get me down, Ray, please." Paris's voice was so soft and vaguely familiar, like the voice of some long-lost brother that he never had, calling to him from somewhere far away. It caused Ray confusion. He swallowed hard and then let the pulley down. What was he thinking of anyway? What had he planned to do? "I'm sorry," Ray blurted, baby-like. He helped Paris out of the straps. "I don't know what I was thinking." "Well, Bender," Paris said in his normal tone, "I always said you were a sick fuck." It wasn't the right thing to say at that moment. Before he could get the last ankle strap, Ray activated the pulley once more, spiraling Paris into the air feet first. "Bender," Paris shrieked, as he hung upside down with his feet entwined within the rope. "Get me down, I was only joking." "You never joke, Eugene," Ray stated. He stopped the pulley at the height that was not going to put a strain on his back. It was a comfortable height for sticking. He went to the cupboard and found the most horrific weapon to be found, a long pole with jewel barbs at either end. It had been Paris's favourite killing device before more humane methods had been implemented, and it still had a mysterious clamour of death about it, even in its current brittle, rusty state. "Bender, what? Put that fucking thing down. I said I was only joking." Ray shook his head. "I know you're lying, Eugene. I know you've hated me since day one, and tonight you came here to kill me." "No." Ray's jewel-barbed instrument effectively slashed through Paris's dirty white singlet, splitting it completely into separate sections. It also left a neat, shallow cut down the centre of Paris's chest. "Now you have to buy another singlet," Ray said. "That one's long since gone past its use-by date, and it stank of sweat anyway." "Ray, please," Paris pleaded. "Let me down from here." Ray grinned from ear to half ear. An apology would have been nice. "Well," Paris gasped, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ray." "Sorry for what?" "Sorry for everything. For being an arsehole, for riding you, for setting you up. For trying to steal Donna away from me." Paris laughed at the suggestion. "Don't laugh," Ray spat. The blade came up to rest an inch away from Paris's crotch. The barb was neatly within testicle removing range. Paris stopped laughing. "I didn't steal your squeeze," Paris said, with sweat glistening across his forehead. "She fucking paid me to sit on your lap." Ray lifted the blade. "She what?" "She paid me. She was pissed with you, and she thought it was the one way of telling you to fuck off. You were both having some lover's quarrel or something. I don't fucking know. Look, Ray," Paris said emphatically, "she's not my type." Ray dropped the weapon with a loud clatter. It came to rest in the stainless steel trough. The blood had run out of his body and into his shoes. He was drained emotionally. But it all made sense. He realized he did not hate Paris any more than he hated the entire human race. And even if Paris was telling the truth about Donna, he did not for 1 minute believe his apologies were real. But that was no reason to kill the man. "I don't hate you, Eugene," he said. "You can't help what you are." I don't hate you either, Ray. It's my personality. I can't carry on like a Nancy boy in front of my mates. They expect me to be the boss. It's an image thing, you understand. Paris was right. Ray nodded. It was all a game. Okay, so let me down, fuck you. A frown crossed Ray's face, but he chuckled when he saw Paris's wide grin. I'm joking. So am I, Ray said, and he picked up the double-edged spike. What? Oh, shit, Bruce choked, spilling his coffee. Ray, Donna gasped, what's happened to you? Ray looked down at himself. He was covered in blood. His ear throbbed, and blood was still flowing freely from the wound on his cheek. He found a spare seat and collapsed into it. Ray, come out of it, Donna snapped. She circled him like a sick blowfly, not sure whether to touch him or walk away. What have you been doing? Ray's eyes were bleak orbs. Weariness laced with shock was setting in and taking over his body. It had been a long night. Huh? She repeated the question. Ray stuttered. What have I been doing? You asked me what have I been doing? He sighed, leaning back against the chair, easing his aching body. The chair was comfortable, and he nearly fell instantly to sleep. Something hit the floor and rolled under a small table. Bruce picked it up, looked at it quizzically. A handle of some sort. Despite the blood that saturated his shirt, Donna took hold of Ray and shook him harshly. It roused him sufficiently. Huh? I'll tell you, Don, I'll tell you. I'll tell you what I've been doing. I'll call an ambulance, Bruce suggested. No, don't bother, Ray told him. But Ray, you're covered in blood. Oh, it's not all mine. Donna stepped away from him. You've slaughtered a cow, haven't you? Ray laughed like a bandsaw. No more slaughtering. Well, what have you been doing down there? Research, Ray said, with a faint grin. Research? Bruce coughed. Research for what? But Ray had gone to sleep.